Welcome to Grab Your Popcorn. I am your host, Brian Kroc, and along with me is, of course, David Fridge Kalisa.
Hey, what's going on, everybody?
So, guys, we had fun last week. Now we're back again to bring you another classic film. A classic film that I admit I had never watched until today.
That is a humongous shame on you, by the way.
I know, but there's only so much time that I have in this world, and I watch a lot of movies, and I listen to a lot of music, and I play a lot of video games, and then I also cook and sleep. So, you know, there's that. There's that to that I'm busy with, but...
I'm sorry, all I heard was a list of excuses.
It's like, oh, no. But today we are bringing you, I know I'm ashamed to admit that I've never seen it, The Great Escape. Of course, directed by John Sturges and starring a massive cast of great, great actors. But we will get to the majority of them later on when we actually go through the cast. But we'll just give a quick rundown here. You got Steve McQueen, James Garner, Richard Attenborough, and then Charles Bronson, James Coburn, and a crap ton of other people who showed up in a crap ton of other films.
Yes.
But yes, this is one fabulous cast that was put together. And here's what I love, all right, is that first let's I want to talk about the trailer just for a little bit. I know you didn't watch the trailer, but I did.
Okay.
Because I always check out the trailers for these things anyway. But for me, like, I watched it, and I watched it after the fact. So, like, I watched the movie, and then I watched the trailer. I know I'm supposed to do it the other way around. But, like, I already knew the premise of The Great Escape anyway, and so it didn't really matter to me, and I didn't think about it until later. So I watched the trailer, and I'm not going to play it here today just because it's, like, 3 minutes long, and it's mostly music, and so it doesn't really do much for us. But I watched it, and it does not present itself in the way that the movie presents itself, which cracked me up, which means that there is definitely a disconnect between the people who were marketing and the people who were directing.
Which is very possible. It could also mean that they just want to make sure they got as much audience as possible with it. You know, that maybe they did it on purpose. People have also been known to do that in marketing.
All right. So, yes, there was obviously a disconnect somewhere between the trailer and the film itself. But what it did do was it obviously introduced the cast and, like, what the movie was going to be about and, like, that kind of stuff. Didn't really give away a whole lot of the plot. It was just like, okay, this is cool. Showing Steve McQueen riding around on a motorcycle and Richard Attenborough doing his deal, you know, before he became a billionaire and started a dinosaur park. But
yes, that's true. Also thinking about the trailer, it's not really going to have a whole lot that they want to give away. I mean, they really just want to keep at the premise, and the movie is all about the detail of what all went into them actually being able to pull this off.
Yes.
And there's just no way to put that in the trailer, so they probably kept it simple on purpose and let people try to imagine what it was going to be like up until they actually saw the film.
Yes, yes, yes. All right, so feature presentation. Great Escape, released 1963, is one of these movies that is, one, it's amazing in and of itself just for the way that it's portrayed, but two, is based on a true story, which was a great thing for me to read about because, you know me, I'm a history buff, and
yes.
I love that kind of information. And the things that I loved the most in this movie was, one, it's like I said, there was a disconnect between the trailer and the film itself. So the trailer was very, very serious and, like, didn't really give away a lot. But the movie itself is actually really funny.
Yeah, there's a lot of comedic relief for being based on POWs.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're used to POW movies such as Deer Hunter.
Yeah, yeah.
Completely just going to the, you know, the mind fuck of everything.
Yeah. Well, Vietnam was a vastly different setup than,
I mean, that's
than
true.
World War II.
That's very true. But nonetheless, very few POW experiences are going to be in and of itself comedic.
Yeah.
But the director and the writers of the film did very well to give the viewers a actual, for the most part, happy experience while viewing the movie.
Yes. So the basic plot is World War II. America is in the fight. The Brits are there. There's some Canadians. There's all sorts of people that are fighting along. And along the way, some of these people have been captured. And those people as you know, officers are sworn to try to escape imprisonment. And if they can't escape, they're supposed to make them waste time and resources to maintain watching them.
Yes.
So the Germans, in their brilliantness, decided, hey, we're going to take the worst offenders, the people who have tried to break out the most ingenious, innovative, and downright gutsiest escape artists that we have imprisoned in the Third Reich, and we're going to stick them all in one camp because we think that we can. We have set up. We've learned enough of other people trying to escape that we can stop these people from escaping.
Yes, and it's very, very easy to tell, you know, right off the bat that, you know, this is just a meeting of the minds. I mean, they are all MacGyvers in their own sense of the word.
Exactly. It is a prison full of MacGyvers.
And it is the full spectrum of MacGyver.
It is MacGyver stuck with, like, the A-team and, like, a few other people just all thrown together into one thing. And it's, like, 3 hours of this movie. It's like, and like three quarters of it is just this.
And it's portrayed extremely well. And the thing that is just awesome to watch, you know, in it, especially for as long as it's been out, it holds up to this day.
Yeah.
You know, any age group, you know, that knows anything about the war can immediately watch this movie mm-hmm. and, you know, in a sense, relate to it and just understand, you know, what was going on, what they were going through. But the ingenuity of all the steps that they take to prepare for this, and especially for the number of people they want to take out
yes.
in this event, you know, because it's, you know, vastly larger than what they usually do. They normally yes. do like 7 to 10 people at a time. Now they're wanting to do
the whole camp,
yeah.
you know, basically 250 people. I think in real life there were, it was something like 1,800 people in the prison camp. And 600 people were involved in the X organization, hence Big X, played by Richard Attenborough. And like of those, there was supposed to be like 200 something that were supposed to escape. But that didn't end up happening. We'll get to that in just a minute, though.
Yep.
So the what it is that it's a combination of these different nationalities all working together to try and get out of this prison that they've been told they cannot break out of. The first day there are people trying to escape and trying to do stuff and they all get caught and stopped. And so nobody does that, but it does establish a couple of things. One, it shows that the British are calm and collected and are just like, well, let's get to work. Let's start doing this. And then shows Steve McQueen basically just being like, I'm getting out of this place tonight.
Yep.
And then it doesn't happen because he then gets sent to the cooler, isolation, which I thought was funny because they're like, you're being put in isolation next to this other guy who's also in isolation that you can talk to. It's like, I kind of figured that isolation would actually be isolation and you don't actually get to talk to anybody.
Well, and you know, for as mean as Germans and or Nazis are always portrayed in films,
yes,
you would think that they would be a little bit more stern on rules of no talking, no distraction.
Yes, yes.
You were to just sit in this room and not do anything and yeah. starve.
But
he had
a glove and a ball that he was playing with there. He could talk to the dude who was across the way. But actually it was one of my favorite scenes right there, right then and there. He walks into the cell, the German shuts the door, locks it, and then goes, and then he opens up the door again, and you just see this arm reach out with the key.
He pickpocketed him. First day,
just pickpockets the German. It's so great. But what I did enjoy, and if you didn't notice it while actually watching, early on in the movie, they established the difference between the Luftwaffe, which is the Air Force, the German Air Force, that were actually, like, maintaining the camp.
Yep.
And the Gestapo.
SS, yeah.
The SS, yes.
Yeah, they were, if I remember correctly, which I'm not as big a history buff as you were, but, you know, they kind of operated on their own playing field outside of...
Yeah, the SS were above basically everything and had carte blanche to do what they needed to get done.
Okay.
And they were not nice dudes. I think even to join the SS, you had to prove your lineage back several generations to prove that you were a pure Aryan. I mean, those dudes were hardcore. hence why they had skulls, you know, as their like little logo, and then the little lightning things too. But
and also, which explains why each one of them that you see in the film just looks like a snotty douchebag.
Yeah,
and is completely stuck up, even toward Nazis that are looking over the camp. So, it's like you're on the same side, but you're treating them as if they're also POWs.
Yes, and that's kind of the thing that I liked about it. You know, is that yes, they show the guys who were the Luftwaffe, you know, like soldiers, prison guards, basically. They're never shown as being like overly aggressive, or like I don't think that they really hit anybody in the entire movie. They do shoot a couple people who were escaping.
Right, they were just acting out their duties as guards at that point. They weren't doing it out of, you know, rage or...
Yeah, and they don't even look like that evil. Like, you know how they will cast people to look very evil?
They get that like, mean guy.
Yeah, but the SS guys, like, they looked mean. They looked fairly evil, although the head SS dude did not look German at all. But I don't know who that guy was. It's like weird. They cast an Italian dude as the head SS guy. That's funny.
Well, I mean, at that point in Hollywood, you had cast pretty much every A and B lister. They ran out of the list, and they had
the point that James Coburn like plays a British dude, just cracks me up. Like, okay, James, with your deep voice, let's have you say a couple of British phrases and slang, and that establishes you as British.
You work with what you got, okay?
But he did a good job, actually, and his character does pretty well throughout the rest of the film. But honestly, there are a couple of really good standouts for me as far as characters go, and one being Willie and Danny,
the Tunnel Kings.
Yes, Danny, played by Charles Bronson, does an amazing job in that movie. Like, he shows more acting range in that movie than I ever saw, like, in anything else he did.
Especially when you get near the time of escape, when he starts having his mental breakdown, and you see that strong, you know, just burly man, you know, almost have a mental collapse and, you know, have an internal conflict with himself, and he's just really torn up about wanting to escape, but not wanting to ruin it for everybody.
Yes, yes.
And then you have his sidekick, Danny, or I'm sorry, Willie.
Yeah.
Just right there saving them because they'd worked side by side, getting all these tunnels built.
Yeah.
Getting ready to go. They'd both been buried multiple times. So he understands what he's going through, mm-hmm. and he is not going to let him, you know, do that to himself.
Yes.
So
he was a coal miner back in the day, and so that's like why he even does that. But it's like he says in the movie, you know, he's like, I was always scared of small rooms, closets, and tunnels. He's like, but I buried that fear and I went down anyway. Mm. It's like, okay, man, that's hardcore. But yeah, you brought up one point that they dug tunnels. It's like, because that's basically the point of the film, is that they dug a tunnel in they dug three different tunnels. Tom, Dick, and Harry were the names of the tunnels. And so it's, if they found one, they could just move to the next one and then go from there. But
really, honestly, the whole point, though, and the main goal was to get all three simultaneously built and done.
Yes.
And that was going to be the main way that they got such a high number of prisoners out.
Yes. As the story progresses, it's a lot of them like figuring each other out, finding out what they're really good at. The scrounger, played by what's his name?
Magnum PI.
Yes, I know that. James Garner. I forget
Who?
Names. Okay, I'm really bad with names. Okay, I'm bad with names. That's why I got to have a list in front of me. James Garner. And his character has some of the best screen time just because he's very interactive. He's very, like, capable of, talking with other people and convincing them of things, as he does with the ferret, as he is called in the movie, which I thought was actually a really great character. The other thing that I truly loved about it, though, was that there were jokes made at his expense, because Steve McQueen going off as the Cooler King, that's essentially what he does. He tries to break out a bunch of times and he just keeps getting sent to the cooler. It's almost like a comedic relief deal, in what he does, but he's also a really smart guy, and he, you know, is there to help out in a lot of different ways.
And overall, though, him keep adding that and doing that is also helping them.
Yes.
Because they are worried about what he's doing and kind of, you know, taking the eye off of them.
Yeah,
while,
yeah.
While they're tunneling, he's trying to escape up top and everything.
Yes.
You know, keeps the heat off of them.
So Henley the Scrounger, James Garner, he has a lot of interactions with the other British folks, less than the Cooler King. And that's just because he's the one who's getting all of the stuff for them that they need to actually make everything and get things done. He gets the camera for the forger. He gets, you know, food and supplies. He gets the stuff for the tailor, you know, to, like, do all of that. And gets the papers that they need to forge so that way they can actually get out there and escape. And
which is another brilliant scene of pickpocketing.
Yes, yes.
Trying to force chocolate onto the guard just to get close to his person. Takes his whole entire wallet off of them and
yeah.
gets everything that they need in one go.
And then uses that to blackmail the guy after the fact. And he's just like, do you know what happens if the commandant finds out? And he's like, off to the Eastern Front with him.
Yep.
Like, okay.
So if you'd like these back and want to live, I need this type of camera and I might be able to find your papers.
And he's not even that subtle about it either. He's just like, you know, hey, if I do this for you though, I'm going to need a favor in return. Here's what I want. I want this camera with this shutter and this and blah, blah, blah. Okay.
Well, I mean, if you're the guard, what are you going to do?
Exactly.
You have no choice. And he knows
he had him by the balls and it was that simple. There was no getting out of that vice.
No.
But yeah, I really enjoyed his character a lot. Because of just his interactions with people, and he was really funny. And not to mention the Brits kind of making fun of him in different ways. Not making fun of him, but sort of lovingly, like, mimicking him and stuff in some of the stuff that he does, which was fantastic. A little bit on to, obviously, the Cooler King. We talked about him, Steve McQueen. Basically, the entire reason to what he does in the movie is just for Steve McQueen to be cool. And then to ride around on a motorcycle. That is his giving of to the plot of the entire movie. I'm not joking. His character is almost useless throughout the main storyline. But he provides a different aspect to the story which needed to be told. And not to mention, I mean, it was really cool watching somebody actually ride around on a motorcycle and do all that kind of stuff.
Especially for, you know, the time that the movie was made, stunts like that were, you know, I'm sure not as big or popular well known as they are in, you know, today's movies and everything.
Yes.
But a little bit of a major point you might have overlooked, or, you know, just haven't watched the movie for the first time, you know, his partner in crime that's in the cooler with him,
Ives
the mole.
Yes.
You know, he unfortunately, just like
loses it,
like I'm sure, you know, some other POWs have.
As the way he put it, he's like, he said he almost went wire crazy.
Yeah, which is what he did.
Which is what he did, yes.
Once they, you know, they did discover one of the tunnels, he went wire crazy. He intentionally got himself killed.
Yes.
And that put Steve McQueen in the right mindset to go, okay, you know what? I don't have my partner now. This is getting a little bit more serious.
Yeah.
He goes, I think it's time for me to actually provide something for this group.
Yes.
And I'll actually have a decent shot of getting away.
Yeah.
So he escapes one more time, only for this time to be caught intentionally.
Yes.
With a whole crap ton of intelligence of the town that's close by, where the rail station is, among many other things. That is to help all these people escape.
Yes.
So, I mean, yes, for the most part, he does his own thing. He rides around the bike. He provides comedic relief. But ultimately, without that intelligence, when it came time for the escape to happen, they would not have been able to find that town near as quickly, get to the train station. So, no, overall, definitely not as contributing of a character, but had a very pivotal point in the storyline after losing a friend and providing some really good intelligence for everybody.
Yes, very much so. Now on to Big X, Richard Attenborough. The thing that I truly loved about his character was the fact that he held everything together.
He was like, he's the glue of the organization.
Yes, he was actually the one that it was, everything revolved around him. He had the entire plan in his head, and he knew what everybody needed to do. And he, like, had that plan the second he stepped into that prison.
And they did a really good job portraying going around to each individual that, mm-hmm. was a head of a department, we'll call it, and overseeing, okay, what are you doing now? Where are we at with this? We need to be here by this time. We need this materials by this.
Yep.
And you better get your ass on it because this needs to happen.
Yeah.
And
that happens a lot, throughout the movie.
Right.
And that's why we talk about, the Tunnel King, the Forger, the Manufacturer, those kinds of titles, because that's exactly the titles that they had. And that is confirmed in the book that the movie was based on, also called The Great Escape, that the term Tunnel King was actually a title that was given to somebody who actually made the tunnels. X is the one that had everything together, and that's why I liked his character. And not to mention Richard Attenborough is just a fantastic actor.
He is.
Anyway, any characters that you truly loved throughout the film?
I'm glad you asked, because actually one that stands out that, I feel for, the movie and at the time it was definitely a supporting actor, would have to be Ashley Pitt.
Yeah.
Played by David McCollum.
Yeah.
A lot of people know him today as Ducky from NCIS.
Yes.
You know, he was very, very attractive young actor. You know, I honestly feel that if Sean Connery maybe didn't come off as Bond off the bat.
Yeah.
If he buffed up a little bit.
Well, Connery had done his own war films and stuff like that, too. So, I mean, he was in The Longest Day and...
Right, no, I know that. I'm just saying, David McCollum, though, as an actor, I feel, especially in his youngest, he could have done a good Bond, because he is sophisticated, but he's got that smart aleck to him, kind of like how Bond does.
Yes.
And, seeing one or two of his other early films, I think he could have been a pretty decent action star.
Yeah.
In that sense and whatnot. But that, as for character in the film, he was responsible for dispersal, saying, he comes up with the ingenious way of disposing of the
dirt,
hundreds of tons of dirt.
Like 50 tons of dirt,
and
or
that's just
like
in
that.
One tunnel.
Yeah,
that's coming out, and he comes up with a way of how to camouflage it outside the camp without it being obvious to any
of
the guards.
Which I wanted to also point out, so that we had our decision between two different movies that we were going to review today, and it was Great Escape, and which I wanted to do because it was one of these, I hadn't seen it before. And the other one was Shawshank Redemption. Both movies use this plot device of releasing the dirt through the leg to get rid of it, which is why Andy would go on strolls through the yard.
My mind is just totally blown. I never correlated the movies with that.
Well, it was a connection that I saw that was like, okay, these were the two movies. And they do the exact same thing in both films. But that happens to me a lot. It's great for me because I'll see something and then all of a sudden I watch, the next movie I watch will have, the same actor in it, in some background part that I never really paid attention to. That happens to me all the time. And I remember one time, I ended up watching, three movies in a row and it had the exact same actor in it three different times in three different roles, that weren't even main characters. And I was just like, holy crap, I guess this is just my weekend to watch movies of this guy. But I noticed those patterns when it comes to watching a movie. It's like, oh, okay, I remember this because they did this. They did the same thing in this other movie, or, this thing happened also in this other movie and that. But that it's a great plot device for that movie because they legitimately did that according to the book. And that's what they did. It's like, oh, we're gonna garden. So how do we get rid of all of this dirt? Well, we're just gonna mix it in with the dirt that we're already doing. But the one I loved though was the marching scene where they were doing it, and James Gardner's just like, keep it sharp, and then it's like they all walk by and he's like, look sharp. So anybody else that pops into your head that you truly loved from the movie?
Cavendish. The Australian POW.
Yes.
He was the manufacturer. He makes the air pump for down the tunnels and everything.
It was Sedgwick.
Sedgwick. Cavendish. I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah.
Cavendish.
James Coburn was the manufacturer.
Yes.
And then Cavendish was...
he was always distractions. He's the one that's seen an outside...
the surveyor.
Yeah.
He was the one who was with the choir and like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, yeah. Sedgwick stuck out to me because he also... He had the real funny scene near the end. He's sort of chilling at a cafe.
Yes.
Minding his business.
It's like, waiter, phone call for you.
And what? I just got here. Okay. Yeah, goes and takes it. Hello. Hello. Then he looks over, sees the waiters, duck down. Okay, I might as well do this. And then car pulls up and just does a drive-by on three German soldiers. And it's like, yes! Yes, totally awesome.
Did it with an MG42? Oh man, I'm blanking on my machine guns. Yeah, an MG42. just drive by. It's like roll down the window. It's like, and then like a light machine gun just pops out of the window. It's like, man, gangs in America need to step up because they are just not doing it as cool.
And those guards, they did a real good job portraying their deaths. They flew back at least three chairs. One of them almost went over the little railing.
Yeah, that's what amazed me is, and I also of course had the thought since I played a ton of games with that machine gun, and like I've seen a ton of demonstrations with it. It is such a well made machine gun that the German military is still using a variant of it today, just like the Brits are still using a variant of the Bren machine gun. But the MG42 at that range against three targets that were just sitting there. It would have, like, they would have splattered. They would have splattered. Because that thing fires so fast. It's like MG42. It's like, and then the next step up would be a minigun. Like that gun just is so fast and just would have lit them up so bad.
So, yeah, no. A
little bit of realism thrown in there. But
that also might have changed the rating of the film a little bit back.
True,
then.
True.
But, no, those are my two standout characters.
Like Death Wish, you know, later on. Starring Charles Bronson. Like, we're just going to shoot up a bunch of people.
So, no, out of all the cast, though, who all did a very good job portraying their characters in very good ways, those are my two standout characters that weren't fully main, but definitely I felt... Did a lot of really neat things throughout the film, and also had a lot of really good screen time.
Yes, one of the things that I also wanted to bring up was the tools and stuff that they use, and everything that they make inside of there. It is legit, like made from stuff that was there. So the lamps and like even the little shovels that they're using are made from like cans. In the very beginning, they make a pickaxe by using two metal pieces off of a car and a piece of wood. They make a hatchet and a hammer out of some other stuff. Like, so many things like that they had in there just were made from stuff. And I loved it. Whoever was in charge of props for that movie did a fantastic job.
Well, and, you know, like we said earlier, I mean, these are the MacGyvers of POWs.
Yes.
You know, they are prison outbreak, you know, extraordinaires. So they have the mindset. They have the ideas behind it. They know what needs to be gathered up in order to do this, but it is, you know, like you said, really need to see on screen how the, you know, they were sort of formed and held together and whatnot, the engineering behind it to make it work with what so little they had.
Okay, so let's get on to the plot towards the end of the movie, because three quarters of the movie is funny, and then three quarters of the way through it turns into not so funny, but it's still a really great film. And I want to warn, if you haven't seen this movie, spoilers are coming ahead. So they, I mean, basic setup before we've
it's
already talked
55
about
55 years old.
Yes.
Movie.
Yes.
If you haven't seen it, I'm sorry. Not sorry.
So they build three tunnels, and one of the tunnels, gets discovered, I think Tom gets discovered.
Yes.
So they go through Dick, and yes, I surprised Fridge with that.
You surprised me with Dick.
With
Thank
Dick.
You.
So they they get into Dick.
I'm choking on it.
Now you're choking on it. So they use Dick to escape. This is going to be so good. But here was the problem. Dick was short. So by about 20 feet and didn't make it quite to the tree line.
Didn't make it to the bush.
Didn't make it to the bush. So yeah, it was short by 20 feet. And so then they had to improvise because they had to escape that night because all their papers were dated for that. And along the way, they're going along. One of the German soldiers comes out and he starts investigating what's going on and whatnot. There is an air raid drill. People get out, blah, blah, blah. And then one dude gets impatient, the tailor. And he's just like, oh, hey, I'm going to pop my head out. And the dude's just like, and freeze. And he starts shooting at Steve McQueen. Who was like the first one out of there and trying to escape. But total, what I think it was supposed to be like 75 people actually escaped. And in real life, they don't really show that in the movie so much.
Oh, no. You definitely do not watch each individual escape.
The main players. Yeah. The main players get out for the sake of story. And from there, it splits off into everybody going for themselves, really. I mean, a couple of groups stay together. James Garner, along with the Forger, who went blind from all of his work in candlelight and stuff like that, myopia. Not completely blind, but like mostly blind. And he took him with him because he felt bad that he was going to have to stay behind after putting in all of this work. So they go out, they find an airfield, and since James Gardner's character was supposed to be a pilot, he decides to fly out of there with like a German scout aircraft. And I actually believe that was a German scout aircraft. I don't think they skimped on that one as far as the planes go, but I don't know because my vast knowledge of aircraft from World War II, I don't know every single little plane that was built for every little tiny detail. I know all the fighters and bombers and stuff, though. But that one, they go out there, they fly around, they run into some trouble, crash, and the Forger gets shot by a sniper, and James Garner gets captured. Next, we'll go Steve McQueen. Steve McQueen goes on, and he, weirdly enough, finds a motorcycle. It's almost like he told the writers that this should happen.
Almost, which
is exactly what happened.
Which is exactly what happened.
He's like, I'm only doing this movie if I can ride on a motorcycle. Okay. All right. Steve, you got it. So he finds a motorcycle, and I believe it was actually a Triumph motorcycle, which is a British motorcycle, which would not have actually been there, but it was the one that he wanted. And so he leads the Germans on a chase throughout the countryside trying to get to Switzerland. And ends up getting captured after doing an amazing jump over a barbed wire fence. But he gets surrounded by soldiers, and they shoot at him, and it hits the motorcycle. He crashes into the barbed wire, can't escape, and he is captured, too. Bartlett, Big X, is captured on the street after he's recognized by the SS. A bunch of other dudes are captured by the SS, and...
Well, Bartlett and McDonald, his like right-hand man, who was in charge of intelligence, when they're training them, you know, the POWs for when they're out on the street and everything, he trips up one of his friends by switching from German to English.
Yes.
The guy responds in English, and, you know, that's just a tactic that the Germans use to see, you know, if somebody... was just posing, you know, as a local or whatever.
Yeah.
And ironically enough, that's what he gets tripped up with while him and Big X are about to board a bus.
Mm-hmm.
The guy says, good luck, and he says, thank you, causes the chase, and that's what causes both of them end up getting captured.
Yes.
And then Cavendish is captured as well.
Mm-hmm.
He hitches a ride, but they end up taking him right into what looks to be a German camp of some sort for soldiers.
Yep. And then the few that do escape are Danny and Willie, who board a rowboat and just go down the river until they find a Swedish-bound freighter.
Yeah,
and then they really stow away on board to escape there. And then the other one would be James Coburn as Sedgwick, who we talked about before, ends up making it to France, where he meets the resistance after they light up some German soldiers with an MG-42, and then they get him to Spain, and then from there he would eventually like get back. I looked into the actual history of those people that did escape, and they were not the nationalities that they were in the movie. They were actually Dutch and Norwegian, so which makes sense because they could probably blend in a lot better than Americans or you know, Brits.
Which I totally get, but why not keep that for the film? I just don't understand.
Well, they because those were the guys that they had main players in generally those parts. I mean, Charles Bronson was an established actor. James Coburn was an established actor. But the other higher up characters, they were really the main players,
fair enough.
Which then though, because they were picked up by the SS and not by, you know, the Luftwaffe or anybody else, this leads to the great tragedy of the entire story, where they round up all of them and they're taking them back to the camp. And all of a sudden a couple of the trucks veer off.
Yeah. There's three prisoner trucks and three motorcycles. Each motorcycle has a mounted machine gun, and when it forks off into three different directions,
one truck goes.
And one motorcycle. Yeah.
And then the other two split off. And then they open up the trucks and they're like, hey, everybody, you know, it's like, it's stretch your legs, blah, blah, blah. So they get out and they're doing their thing. And Bartlett and oh, I forgot who he was talking
McDonald.
To.
McDonald,
yes. They're chatting, and Bartlett, Big X, is just like, you know, it's like this escape, it's like it kept me alive, like it kept me going, blah, 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 blah. And then the next thing you hear is the gun cocking, and then you hear the machine gun going off. And in reality, that 50 of the people who escaped were actually killed by the Germans.
Flat out murdered.
Not in that way in real life. I mean, the 50 were still killed, but they weren't like all rounded up together and shot. But a bunch of them were shot basically without any kind of trial or any of that kind of stuff, under the guise of them, you know, oh, they were trying to escape, so we shot them. And then a few of them showed back up again back at the camp. And then that's where the final one shows up, with Steve McQueen showing up as the Cooler King one more time, rolls on up in there. It's like, and is just like, all right, how many were killed? And they're like, 50 people were killed. And he's just like, okay, well, you got that. It's like, and then he realizes that a couple more people did actually escape. And so he was like, all right, time to go. And so he calmly and coolly strolls over to the cooler, where his other American friend tosses him his glove and ball. And they walk him in. The German opens up the gate, puts him in there, locks the gate. And as the German is walking away, he hears the ball bouncing off the wall again. He pauses for 1 second, looks back, and then proceeds on his way. And then the end. So that's it. So this movie that starts out really, really funny and really sort of interesting, with like the greatest cheery march song ever that I've heard in a movie, which is da 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 da. And that's what plays at the very end when he's marching off to the cooler, you know, to chill out for a good long while. And it starts off really funny, and then it kind of takes this very serious dramatic turn. And but at the end of it, you're like, man, what a great story to tell.
And so, fun fact about it, my wife, she hadn't seen it, you know, up until a couple years ago. So I finally, you know, got convinced her to sit down and watch it with me, and whatnot. I was pointing out a few of the characters, and I knew one of the ones that would get her, of course, was David McCollum, because she's a huge NCIS fan.
Yes.
And so we're sitting there watching it, and, you know, just like you said, the how it's set up and the soundtrack for it and the camaraderie between all the characters is going really well. And then everything happens, and it's getting really intense, and she's really into it and everything. And then the trucks split off after they were captured. And they did I thought it was just a really, really good, intense job of how they edited and just did the sound for it. Because, you know, with the rating of the film and also violence not being as upfront, you know, for that time period, You all you see is the gun go off. You don't see anybody fall or get hit by bullets or anything.
There's not like any real blood or anything.
No, you never see anybody die on screen per se from that particular scene. So you just hear it go off, and then it switches scenes to a couple of the soldiers looking off in the distance, and then you hear two other locations in the far distance go off,
mm-hmm.
and which is the indication that those are the other two trucks. And I remember I looked over at her, and her mouth was just kind of open, and she looked over at me, and she goes, "Did what really happen, you know, did that really just happen?"
Yeah.
Sort of thing. You know, she just was totally taken back by it, and now she refuses to watch the movie with me any other time again because it's, you know, it's a sad ending per se, you know, that many people just for one incident got killed in that way.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
But it was also really neat on a personal level to see somebody get to watch this in such an iconic film.
Yeah.
For the first time and see their genuine reaction.
Yeah. And that's what was great for me. I mean, because I knew the story. I knew what the movie was about and all of that. Because, I mean, my dad has talked about it numerous times and I've seen a bunch of clips of it. But I never actually sat down and just watched the movie in and of itself. And so that's what was great for me is that I was watching it and I was just laughing my head off for the most part because I was like, this movie is great. And that's my rating that I'm sticking to. This movie is great. But it stands the test of time. Visually speaking, it is well thought out. It is well played. And like the only real mistakes that I discovered in the movie were like really minor, you know, like sun position and like that kind of stuff for certain scenes. It's like, but continuity wise, everything makes sense. You like the characters as they are. It's like I said, they don't establish the Germans necessarily as the bad guys, more so as just the adversaries that they are up against. And then there are other Germans, though, that are like the bad guys. And those are the ones that are just really, really bad guys. But yeah, this movie to me is one of those movies that should be on anybody's list of, you know, great movies. Even if you just include it in war movies, it's still going to be in top 10 for me. Just because it's a great, great film, you know, and I think that people should watch it.
I think people should watch it too.
So yeah, good job suggesting this one actually, because I enjoyed it immensely. But let's go ahead and actually get to the cast and crew.
Sounds good.
So let's start with the director, John Sturges. Do you know who John Sturges is?
I'm pretty positive he's not the inventor of the Sturges rally.
No. Okay. So John Elliott Sturges, born 1910, died 1992. You might recognize a couple of his movies. Let's see, Bad Day at Black Rock?
Nope.
Gunfight at the OK Corral?
That one I do know.
How about The Magnificent Seven?
Well, of course.
And then, of course, he did The Great Escape. And then another one that I know he is very famous for, Ice Station Zebra. And if we do that one, I think we got to get our friend Armand in here to actually talk about that one, 1968. So, yes, he directed a bunch of different movies. He's got, like, a crap ton of them, though, that you can actually go back and look through. His last movie that he directed was 1976 with The Eagle Has Landed. But, yeah, weirdly enough, Great Escape was actually towards the end of his career. So he directed a ton of stuff before then. But yeah, I mean, obviously he knows how to shoot a film. It's like he had a lot of experience and this movie actually worked really, really well for him. Steve McQueen, obviously everyone now knows who Steve McQueen is. And mainly they really know about him because of this movie. Because this is the one that actually established him as like, this dude's freaking awesome. It was, of course, also in like The Magnificent Seven, Towering Inferno, and Cincinnati Kid, and Thomas Crown Affair, the original, not the remake that was done much later on. But yeah, he does a great job in this movie purely because, one, he does pretty much all of his own stunts. And I actually, I told David here even a fact that he didn't know before, and that was not only did he do all of his own stunts on the motorcycle and stuff, he actually also played the Germans that were chasing him throughout the scene. Like the German on the motorcycle, that was Steve McQueen. So that cracked me up. He was like, okay. He's like, I'm going to play myself, and I'm going to play these other dudes that are chasing me. Because why not?
More money.
That's true. I mean, but he did most of his own stunts, the exception being the last big jump over the barbed wire fence, which was done by Bud Ekins, who is a stuntman that you can look up. He's done a bunch of different things that are fascinating. Back in the day, I mean, he was the guy to get for any kind of those stunts.
I really wish they would do an up-to-date documentary on stuntmen and women in today's industry.
Yes.
Just to sort of, you know, show what they go through, like training-wise and all the different projects that they do at any given time. Because, you know, most actors or actresses, they do one, maybe two movies at a time tops, whereas, you know, a stunt person, you know, they could be involved in 5 to 10 projects at a time because it's
yes.
just, okay, I need to be on this set to hurl myself off this thing at such time. Then I need to make my way over here by this time to do a fight scene. And I think that they have almost a vastly little bit crazier and cooler career than just an actor or actress would.
Yeah. All right. So James Garner. James Garner, of course, is quite famous.
Just a little bit.
just a bit famous. But he was in the series Maverick and then showed up in the movie later on as well. And then, of course, he was Jim Rockford in The Rockford Files, and he's been in a crap ton of other stuff that is just really, really long list of things that he did. He's got awards out the wazoo. just crazy, crazy stuff. He started acting in his very first movie in 1956 called Toward the Unknown and finished it off well into... The 2000s, 2010, I think, is the last thing listed here for movies, and he did voice acting. In 2013, he was on TV doing stuff still. But, yeah, I mean, this is one dude who's been in every type of movie you could possibly think of.
He knows the industry very, very well.
Yes, yes. And the one that I know, he was in Space Cowboys, which I actually really liked, about the old guys going to space.
That's not per se an underrated movie, but it's not a like well-known movie. You don't see it on very often. It's not talked about very often, but the star power that's in it for the four guys that are you know, the main crew of it, you know, that's some high power right there.
Yes, absolutely. All right, let's do Richard Attenborough next. So Richard Attenborough, of course, John Hammond of Jurassic Park.
That's
spared no expense. Got a bunch of people killed. Good guy. He's such an icon of British acting. I mean, he's got to be up there with a lot of these other like staples of British actors, at least up until his passing. I mean, come on. I mean, he played freaking Santa in Miracle on 34th Street in like the remake. And I mean, he was so freaking good in The Great Escape. I mean, he's the one who honestly holds the entire movie together. He holds the plot of the story together in as far as the character goes. And his acting is just so well done.
He also stands out the most to me because whoever did the makeup gave him that really neat scar.
Yeah, yeah.
Next to his eye and everything like that.
Yes.
It was such a really neat character trait. That just makes him stand out. And it also makes you wonder why he didn't really try to cover it up. Because you know that the Germans and everybody have to have pictures of him, you know, on their files and whatnot. But when he, you know, goes to escape and he's in his, you know, escape clothes and everything, his face is not messed with at all. No makeup, no device trying to hide it. And I'm just like, that was a little bit of a plot hole for me. I'm just like, You know, if I have a facial feature that is unique to just me, I'm going to try and hide it that way. You know, when these higher-ups are looking for me, I'm not going to stick out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, yeah. But Richard Attenborough is just so good in, like, everything he does. He's so believable as whatever character he happens to be. But, of course, for me as a child, he will always be John Hammond, owner of Jurassic Park.
Oh, that's me as well. I guarantee my wife would agree with that. I mean, He's such that soft-spoken, good-hearted grandpa.
Yes.
You know, which is what he was in the film.
Yeah. It's like, and I can literally walk around anywhere and say spared no expense, and everyone will think of him, you know, because that's what he said all the time in the movie. It's like, but when he even in Jurassic Park, when he does the whole bit about the flea circus, it's like, he's so captivating in that moment. Like, that you... it's mind-blowing to me now. It's like when I was a kid and I watched the movie, I was like, okay, it's like, wow, this is a really cool, you know, movie and stuff. It's got dinosaurs in it. Awesome. Then when I watched it later on, I was like, man, he is such a good actor. It's like, it's kind of hard to explain like how much he actually impacted me with that performance. And then to go on and see him do a bunch of other stuff. Of course, he was in the original Flight of the Phoenix as well, which is another fantastic film that was also remade, starring a bunch of other random people I don't remember right now. All right, Charles Bronson. Charles Bronson, the man from Death Wish.
There's no words to describe how awesome this guy is.
Death Wish 18, the wished for death.
You know, if... I'd probably watch them. If they were at 18 or 19, I'd probably still be watching them. I would do a Death Wish marathon.
Yes. I told you before, it's like he showed a lot of range in The Great Escape, and I loved it. But I mainly know him from those, like the bad action movies from the 80s where he showed up, and he's just like, I'm going to walk around with a gun and just shoot people.
Don't you dare call them bad action films, okay?
That is
blasphemy.
I lovingly call them bad action films, okay?
No.
Yes.
No, they're not bad.
The first one was brilliant. Then it was a different production company from that point on, and they were bad. Because this was like the same production company that frickin' did like all of like Roger Corman's crappy films, which are awesome in and of their own right. But I'm just saying, it's like... There's a great documentary about that company, like online,
because
it was two Italian dudes, and they literally were like, how many movies can we make for the absolute cheapest amount, and who can we cast to like do all of this stuff? And so they got Death Wish like after the first one, and were like, okay, we can make another Death Wish. So they made 2, 3, and 4, and like all of those. And Bronson was just like, oh, they're still gonna keep paying me, I might as well keep doing them. And that was it. That was the gist of it. I got to find the name of that documentary, though, and I'll tell you about it whenever I do. But, yeah, it's fascinating because basically they were like, you know, we just want to make a bunch of movies that we know aren't really going to do, like, exceptionally well. But they're going to show they're going to make money because we know people will go see them, and they're going to cost us next to nothing. These are the same guys who did, like, the Fantastic Four movie, like the original Fantastic Four movie that was never released.
Probably for good reason.
So, yes. But they were basically like, we're going to make a ton of action movies. We're going to have boobs in them. And there's going to be a lot of blood. And we're going to get a bunch of kids to go see them. And that was their entire plan. So, there you go.
The more you know.
The more you know. Let's see. And then going on top of that, James Coburn, the man with the voice. Of course, he plays a British character. He is not British. He is American from California. But this is one of those dudes that he showed up in The Magnificent Seven as well. As I believe he was the knife guy that they bring on.
It's been so long since I've watched the original. I couldn't even picture him.
Yeah. So I don't remember. But, yeah, he did a bunch of Westerns and stuff, too. And one of the first ones I remember him, though, was that Mel Gibson movie. Was it Payback or?
So where his son gets kidnapped?
No, maybe I'm confused. It's a Mel Gibson film where he plays like this really tough dude who gets like robbed of like $50,000 or something like that. It's like somebody.
Oh,
takes,
no, that is Payback. I'm thinking of Ransom.
Yes, Ransom.
Another one word movie.
Yes. And but he meets James Coburn, and he shoots his luggage, and he's like, what are you accomplishing other than putting holes in my Armani suits? Like, James Coburn was that guy who could make something really, really funny without even really trying. It's like, because he could deliver the line so perfectly. But what I know he's most well known for, at least what I would view him to be most well known for, is the Flint films, Our Man Flint and In Like Flint.
Yes. Yes, you are correct.
Which is like kind of a James Bond-esque setup, international man of mystery solving problems, but usually involves a bit more womanizing, which is saying something.
Just a little bit. And I think, you know, if I were to categorize, I think those would be categorized a little bit under like cult films now, like cult classics.
Yes, yes, yes. But he did so much, like as far as movies go. Just keeps showing up in a bunch of different stuff. But he had that voice. That voice that was so, so good. But honestly, the movie that I remember him the most from, and I know this is going to get a lot of people who love films just being like, huh? Hudson Hawk, starring Bruce Willis and Danny Aiello and James Coburn as the bad guy from the CIA who he's got to like basically fight. That movie is so bad, it's awesome. And yet I love watching it. Because why not? But yes, James Coburn is in that movie, and I remember him being so like so good in that film. I was just like, man, this dude's great, well, which see, made me want to actually watch him in other stuff.
I want to go back and just watch it again just because now I know that that's who that is, like correlation and everything like that.
Yes.
It'd be interesting to see the difference in characters from his Great Escape performance to his Hudson Hawk performance.
So here is kind of the interesting thing that about this movie, and I think a lot of other people too who starred in war movies at that time, is that they actually served in the military. A lot of them did. Garner was a Korean War veteran. Attenborough served for the RAF in World War II. A bunch of the other dudes were in World War II as well. Served with honor and had, you know, awards and medals and stuff, like a bunch of these dudes. And that's what I thought was really interesting, because you get to see this point where the British officers are, you know, they're playing officers, obviously, but they were, you know, they were in the military at that time. And so for them, it was a very personal thing. You know, Attenborough being in this movie and playing that character, he took it upon himself, and as well as everyone else did, to really play that character right and to bring it to life, so that way people understood that, you know, these soldiers risked their lives, and a lot of them lost their lives trying to escape from the prisons that they were in. And I saw a lot of respect for what they did in that film. And then when I started to think about it, a lot of these other war movies, you know, like Bridge on the River Kwai or The Longest Day, a lot of those guys did actually serve in the military at that time. And so, you know, they understood what they were doing, you know. Nowadays, it's a lot of training. It's like you talk like a show like Band of Brothers or Saving Private Ryan. They all had to go there and they had to learn how to be those types of soldiers. These dudes already knew it because they lived it. And I loved that fact.
It's great, great thing to point out. I mean, it's like I said, it shows the authenticity behind their part. You know, it's kind of like they're not just doing this film, you know, for a paycheck. I'm sure it's a reason behind it, but, you know, they get to reprise their role as a soldier and get to show, you know, put that uniform on one more time and, you know, give it the due respect that it deserves.
Yes. All right. So how much do you think it cost to make this movie? 1963. Big budget film.
I'd say maybe $1 to $2 million.
$4 million. You know how much it earned in the U.S.?
Oh, I'm going to guess it blew it out of the water.
$12 million. Which is actually huge for that time. Well, so, yeah. but considering the cast, considering that it was, I mean, I'm assuming most of the money actually went into cast and like location and stuff, because most of the movie was filmed in one location. But there was a lot of stuff thrown in there too. But yeah, it's, the movie is 172 minutes long, and, it is, you know, a great film.
It's a great film because you do not feel like it's almost.
Yeah, you don't. It doesn't feel like it's as long as it is because it's set up so well and it runs so well. There isn't like a point where you're just like, oh, okay, I can really skip this part, because you just want to pay attention to what's going on and see how everything fits together. But yeah, that's it. Great Escape, 1963, directed by John Sturges, and of course starring the all-star cast of Steve McQueen, James Garner, Richard Attenborough, Charles Bronson, James Coburn, and a bunch of other British actors. And I'm not kidding, if you go through any of their IMDb pages, you're just like, holy cow, these dudes were in a crap ton of films. And that's exactly what happened. They, a bunch of them became famous because of The Great Escape, including Steve McQueen, because this movie really cemented him as a superstar in his day. And yeah, I got nothing else to add.
There's nothing else to add. We covered a lot of really good points with it. Definitely, you know, hit all the major key points that really, you know, are what make this film still stand out to this day.
Yes.
Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed talking about it.
I do have to say, there you can actually go to the location that the book was based on. They do have a thing set up to where the tunnel actually was. You can see where it was built and exactly how short it was when... before the tree line and like where the fences were and stuff like that. This is a location that you can go visit in Germany. You can look it up at the book, The Great Escape, and find a lot more information about it. There's a ton of stuff online. You can see a bunch of photos and like how everything was set up. But they've done a lot to really pay respect to the 50 people that lost their lives in that incident. And I absolutely loved it. But if there is one thing that I learned throughout this entire thing of enjoying this fantastic, funny, and dramatic film is that, one, if you're going to do a drive-by, do it with an MG42. Two, don't ever try to escape with a short dick. And three, grab your popcorn.